and welcome to Lesson 24. Today we're going to be looking at building social capital. Now, before we get into that, I just want to review very briefly some of the fundamentals of effective advocacy. And as I've indicated, at the core of a lot of this is leadership, not necessarily leadership as a position, but the ability to manage meaning. Now, around this leadership element, and they're all interrelated, you've got the main competencies of advocacy, which is framing, which is what I went over in the last lesson. This one, we're going to be going over social capital, or the building of relationships in the public sphere. And then the next lesson in this little trinity of the three core competencies of advocacy will deal with the mobilization of resources. Now, in each of these areas, I've also included a mention here of attitude and positioning, which I didn't go into in the lesson yesterday, but we will revisit some of these elements in Module 6. Also in the area of social capital, which is the building of relationships and depends greatly upon communications. Again, we'll delve into a couple of these areas in more depth in Module 6. And then tomorrow, as we look at mobilizing resources, we'll see connections between personality types and storytelling that we'll go into in more depth also in Module 6, which is where we'll also take time to look at. And I believe that one lesson is a very powerful lesson. The potential of teams is at its core simply exciting. And I'm really looking forward to that lesson in Module 6. Let's move on. Now, as we begin to look at building social capital, part of what we're interested in here is becoming effective in the community that we are working. And the three competencies that we're talking about, that of framing, building social capital, and mobilizing resources, are really integrated. You can't totally tease them apart and do one without being involved somehow in the other. We talk about them separately in order to better understand them, to use different lenses through which we expand our understanding, but they're not meant to be understood as being distinct and separate activities. Now, each competency is needed to get things done and to get them done in a constructive way. It's only when the competencies are combined that change and development is really healthy. Now, social capital. We want to look at what it is and why it's important. We're also going to be looking at who should be good at building social capital. What are the steps to effective building of social capital? Or can we, in fact, lay it out as simple steps? And then we're going to look at some of the actions that we would recommend that you include. But what is social capital? There's an intrinsic value in it that is understood, but frankly, people cannot clearly agree upon a definition of what social capital is. Because social capital is poorly conceptualized, then operationalizing any concept is rather problematic. But the fact is, it's interesting enough, and it somehow is seen to be tying together elements of sociology, of economics, of development, and even into areas of good democratic societies that are seen as beneficial. So bottom line, social capital is a way of looking at social relationships that have productive benefits, and not just for, you know, one or two parties necessarily. Now, social capital is seen as being very unique according to the context, according to who are the players or the stakeholders or the parties involved in social relationships, and the purposes of those relationships and the social context. In other words, there really is no universal definition, and there is great variance in the way social capital is explained. You can find a lot of information at this site, as well as in a number of other books, and some of them I will also list below. Now, before this gets too esoteric and seemingly irrelevant to being effective at the United Nations, just give me one more slide and then I'll go into something that is a little bit more tangible. And because we can't just give you simple steps to how to build social capital, by going over some of the types of social capital and then a grid that looks at the intentional building of social relationships, you'll begin to see its relevance, and it will give you some ideas about what you can do to build your organization's social capital. It will stimulate your thinking and get the creative juices flowing. Again, social capital comes from the networks that exist between us. And as noted, it varies between the networks that have got very different characters. It's very unique according to the individual organizations and or the individuals and the social context and society within which these individuals and organizations reside. Now, capital varies with the strength of the ties and their durability. Some may have strong ties for a very short space of time. However, if something critical or urgent or difficult arises, those apparently strong ties in the moment will virtually evaporate overnight. There is a durability element that is not the same as strength. Capital varies with the extent to which they foster trust and reciprocity. And these are two key elements to the area of social capital. After all, it's the process of engagement. It's the give and take in the relationships that is that which builds and sustains social capital. So it comes essentially in two forms, and that's the bonding social capital, which is formed in closely knit groups such as that between friends and is often seen as a more horizontal type of relationship or social capital. And then there's the bridging social capital that's often formed between diverse groups. They can have very different power bases. They can have very different interests and focuses. Organizations, for example, one might be a business and the other one might be an NGO and have seemingly no interest in one another, but perhaps because of the nature of a relationship that can be built and of benefit to both parties indirectly, they can actually develop quite strong ties. Here I'm going to pick up a magnifying glass, not exactly a microscope, just a more of a magnifying glass, so that we can look at a few different types of social capital. And as we look at these types and how they play out on the grid, this is where you'll begin to see who really should be utilizing social capital and how you can go about utilizing your understanding of what social capital is to strengthen your organization and to develop your social capital that can be useful for the strengthening of your organization's work at the United Nations and in other places. Now, here, the first two, we've got public regarding and private regarding kinds of social capital. And the public is like the relationships that are built and established in, for example, the PTSA. This is a way that people are mobilized to action, grounded in, you know, based in the schools and the interests of parents in supporting their children's education. But then there are social clubs, and these often appeal to more people, and they're more private. But still, even in that context and in that environment, social capital can be built up. And even through working together within some kind of a committee and a social club, while it is more private than it is public, it still builds social capital. Then there are formal and informal, and there are institutions that you, for example, where you pay your dues, and then there are others where, well, maybe you pay your dues in forms of tickets to get into the baseball game, but the social capital that you build by going with people to a baseball game is considered informal rather than the formal relationships that are developed in dues-paying organizations, for example. Now then here we come with the bridging and the bonding types of social capital. I've differentiated them with the vertical and horizontal. It's just one way of understanding these. But bonding mostly happens between people who have commonality. They may be friends, they may be brothers and sisters, they may be friends and family, or perhaps they're bonded because they live in a similar community. And this is different than the kind of social capital that is built, for example, between different kinds of organizations or organizations that are perhaps even in different countries. Perhaps they have a bond that is that they work in a common area of concern, for example, women's issues or drugs and trafficking issues. But they have very different environments to work within, and still there are many differences, and so the relationships that are built between those kinds of organizations tend to be along the bridging kind. They're more difficult to accomplish and to sustain, however, they still can be built, and there are still benefits to the building of those relationships. And there are those with strong ties and weak ties, or durable, ones that are durable, and ones that can that are more episodic and opportunistic. These provide different types of services in our lives and in our communities, some of which are very important at certain times. For example, the weak ties that are more episodic and opportunistic, such as we know people in an organization, or we've known another person who used to work in our old corporation, and they can be somebody that can actually help us get a job. Very important, can be a very important moment, but it may not be something, that kind of a tie and relationship with that person is not necessarily one that will endure through health difficulties, or not something that we would share difficulties of marriage, for example, with, and doesn't provide that kind of social support. So you can see all different kinds of social capital and different types that exist in our lives. We have those kinds of ties within our society that are very varied and are useful in quite distinct and different ways. So again, there's no simple way of defining any of these types of relationships, social relationships, and yet the benefits to nurturing them and to intentionally developing them can be significant. So here we've got this grid that allows us to see how we can utilize our understanding of social capital to intentionally build some of the more challenging relationships, but ones that we would consider of supreme strategic importance for our organization. So what this slide provides is a spread of activities, typical activities, that range from those that require a low level of trust to those that require a higher level of trust. And also it looks at activities that a large group, a small group, or an individual may participate in. Again, so it puts the spread from individual to small group to large group, and at the United Nations, the large group could be the NGOs or even countries or the United Nations itself. And it goes from activities that only require low levels of trust to those that have higher levels of trust. Now, by the simple fact that we map out social capital as being a part of all of these different levels of trust and sizings of groups, what this can do is give you a way to map out how you can get from here as an individual advocate stepping into the United Nations environment to here, where you're working at a large group level with high degrees of trust. And by mapping it out like this and making decisions about your organizations or your personal waypoints, you can chart your course for success at the United Nations. So let's look at a couple more details to stimulate your thinking and get some of those creative juices going. So your first day at the United Nations, you don't know anybody else there, nobody else knows your organization, where can you start? invite somebody for a cup of coffee. Another time you might walk with them to the train, back to their office if they have one, or out to catch a bus or a subway. If there are instances where you're traveling to a conference or to someplace, you know, further away from the United Nations itself, you might decide to travel together. Now, to even ask that you would travel together is shifting the level of trust from something that is just, oh, we happen to be walking this same way, let's just talk until we get to the end of the corridor, to the point where there is an agreement to go somewhere together. And next level is where you not just pass them and acknowledge them in the street, but you may stop and greet them, whether that's the two-cheek, three-cheek, handshake, or hug on the street, according to the circumstances of the relationship, the cultures, and more. That requires additional levels of trust. And the point is, you can initiate and help shift the relationship to the next level. This grid is just here to help you think through some of the processes, to help you brainstorm a little bit. Of course, it'll be up to you to schedule it, but this way can make it doable and help you keep your enthusiasm up, because you'll be able to track your progress from the early stages of your impact at the United Nations at the individual level all the way through to the large group high trust levels. And it can help you keep your aspirations real. Going from having a cup of coffee with a diplomat or another NGO rep to assuming that therefore your organizations are going to publicly cooperate and collaborate is an unreasonable assumption. However, to be able to go from having a cup of coffee to possibly working together in a Congo committee, or even discussing the ways in which your NGO might work with a member state or with a representative from some department of the United Nations Secretariat, is not a total stretch. Okay, it goes from the individual to a larger group, but that's acceptable. That's what the United Nations is about. Individuals representing their organization, so that's acceptable. But to assume that then, because you've had a cup of coffee with a diplomat, that you would be able to get them to endorse your statement, that you would make an ECOSOC and distribute it, that is a stretch. And again, it suggests that you need to or could try some of these interim steps, such as having them speak at one of your events as a speaker. And on that foundation, building relationships, spending time to go back and have a cup of coffee together or to invite them to lunch. The point is here, you can see then the kinds of steps that can be made to gradually move from low levels of trust at the individual level to higher levels of trust at the large group level. Now, this is not an absolute, this grid as it's been laid out. However, it's there to give you ideas and for you to make your own grid of actions and activities that are appropriate to you, your organization, and what would help you stretch yourself, stretch your relationships, and take them to the next level. So I hope that this has been able to give you some ideas, and this grid will be in a PDF so that you can download it and use it to get ideas. Don't use it as an absolute stepwise process to your goals. Sit down with your team. You map out your journey with your key identified representatives in the United Nations Secretariat, or specific member states, or other NGOs. Go ahead and use this map as the basis for your flight plan, for your sail plan, for whatever it is that your action steps are, and get on the road to making the impact of the United Nations that is absolutely possible. So let's get to today's homework. First of all, I want you to take this grid and make your own personal plan for developing one high-level relationship that is important to you. Now, ideally, you do this with your NGO team as well, but that can be done in time. For today, what I want you to do is look back at this grid, and the grid is in part of the PDF that you can download from right below this video, and make your own personal plan. It doesn't have to be perfect. Make it. the key steps to get from the individual level to high levels of trust as an individual at the United Nations. Then I want you to schedule your first waypoint, the first action that you have on that plan. Make sure that it has a date and a time to it. Then what I want you to do is to email your action date and time to me. Now, this is not because I want to check up on you, but for accountability. Yes, it always helps to make a commitment to do something. And if you send that to me, I'll put it in my calendar as well. And I'll email you back and say, how did it go? Go ahead. Get your homework done. And yes, I would love to see your plan even begin to unfold and hear your progress. See you in the next lesson.